North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. It is Friday, October 18th, and you've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson, and I'm joined by Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you doing, Jack?
Doing very well.
Bit foggy out there, but I think we're going to have a splendid fall day.
Yeah, I think so. It looks like it's going to be very nice. There was some frost on my bicycle seat this morning, but I made it in anyway. Yeah,
tis the season.
I'm going to push that as far as I can, I think, as is the tendency. We are also joined by two representatives of the Sandpoint Reader. The publisher, Ben Olson, is here. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Jack.
It's nice to see you again. And the editor, Zach Hagedon, is here as well. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack.
And we are here to discuss the week's news. And should we introduce our last guest halfway in the studio as well? No. No need. Okay.
We have a quiet observer.
We have a quiet observer, too. Okay. We are here to bring you the week's news, and I will start by some news from Sandpoint City Council. On Wednesday, they approved advertising in city public spaces. This would include naming rights and displays of billboards and things of that nature in at city parks and in city public spaces. This was approved unanimously by the Sandpoint City Council and is anticipated to bring in, I think the number I saw was at least $40,000 out at the James E. Russell Sports Complex for a potential arrangement that they would have there. Nothing finalized yet, as well as unknown quantities of money from other postings elsewhere. The Idaho Transportation Department did have their meeting and has announced a proposal for a new Highway 95 plan in Sagal. The concept would create a four-lane divided highway from Lakeshore Drive to Dufert Road, flanked by frontage roads on either side, with a pair of interchanges at Brisbois and Dufert Roads to connect locals with the main roadway, and a shared-use bike/walking path running the length of the corridor. That's the new proposal from the Idaho Transportation Department. Early voting opens on Monday, October 21st, and there was a candidates forum for local elections on the 15th, sponsored by Sandpoint Reader and KRFY, which is mostly what I expect we'll be talking about today. A couple of grants worth mentioning. The West Bonner County School District announced that, or at least three teachers from the West Bonner County School District have been given grants from the from SDCU, those three teachers I think are the only in our listing area from West Bonner County. There's also a note in yesterday's Reader about a grant awarded to the Sandpoint Reader, for which I suppose you deserve congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's
a very competitive process there to get that, though. Yeah,
it's not the two dimes I'm used to rubbing together in my pocket, so it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, a total of $100,000 to be distributed between this year and next.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's pretty cool. Big news. Big news for you guys.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Yeah. So that would, we don't have to go too far into what your plans are with that, but I hope someday that we can. You know, what that funding will mean for your newspaper.
We're all going to buy ourselves platform shoes, top hats.
Yes.
I need more top hats.
Something like that. What did I miss, Chris? I think I see a couple.
Well, there are a couple things here we should mention that also went on this week. Actually, that was a couple weeks ago. There was a group seeking deannexation from Dover. A bunch of residents that live out West Pine Street are asking to be let out of the city limits of Dover because they say they don't get very many services, even though they pay the city taxes. Right now, they're petitioning the district court because Dover City Council turned them down on that request to be de-annexed. So we'll see what happens there. Dover might shrink a little bit if that came through. And then the county commissioners are picking up the question of the Camp Bay easement. The developers of the Camp Bay, there's a big housing development proposed. It's actually not proposed, it's underway there. And this county had vacated the public road that leads to Camp Bay, which had been in use by the public for over a century. it's been tied up in a lot of legal stuff. The set of commissioners that decided to vacate the road are actually going to be out of office now.
Yeah.
And this action that came up before the commissioners this week was a reviewing a plan by the developer M3 to create a walking path in lieu of the public road. But that has been tabled, and I think we're going to hear a lot more about this. And probably Zach will be reporting on this in the week to come, because there's a lot of activity right now with some questions being raised whether the decision to vacate that road was taken properly. So that's flared back up.
Indeed. That's been ongoing now for years. Five years.
I've been back here for 5 years, yeah. And I think it was one of the first stories that I sort of ran into when I came back in 2019.
Before jumping into politics, did you guys the advertising the fact that that passed unanimously was actually caught my eye a little bit. There didn't seem to be much debate about that. Did you guys hear of any debate or questions raised during the announcement? Or the procedure to approve advertising in city public spaces?
Well, typically I would have been covering that, but this week for us it was all candidates all the time, so I wasn't able to tune in. But I had heard sort of talk about it in weeks past.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not super surprised that it was unanimous, considering the fact that it's tied specifically to this sort of James E. Russell facility, and I think there's a real... There's a real push on the council to make that project as worthwhile as possible, and any angle they can find to make it pay dividends, they're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't surprise me at all. I think it's probably a smart move. Whether it has unintended consequences, like are we going to see, you know, billboards, you know, in places that we don't want to see them? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, they're probably going to have to negotiate that as they go further along. But as it regards the James E. Russell thing, I think that makes some financial sense. I mean, you get a big piece of... You know, amenity infrastructure like that, you probably want to make it pay, even if it's not really being used, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Any concerns about, like, you know, Sandpoint Dairy Queen City Beach or anything like that? I don't know.
I think that's a possibility. I mean, we might see Walmart, Coca-Cola, Traverse Park, or, but I don't know that it's going to go that far, honestly.
No. Yeah. Everything would have to be approved as it goes, I suppose. Should we dive into local politics here? This was
head
might,
first.
Might
let's,
as well.
Let's do it.
Let's start. Ben, you moderated this for me. You were there in person and on the stage, talking to all the candidates. This was the second and as far as we know, the final, public meeting of all the candidates at one time in one place. How did you've done this several times, I guess. Any particular things about this time, you know, strike you? Anything different about the way the event went or your experience of it?
Generally, I mean, we have done this a lot. Yeah. And Chris and I usually tag team on the moderator duties of this event, usually before the primary and the general election. You know, my immediate takeaway from that night was, you know, we didn't have all the candidates. We were missing several. Mm-hmm. I mean, several who didn't even tell me they weren't showing.
Yeah.
Others who, you know, just didn't show but gave a notice beforehand. But, you know, we didn't have Cornell Razor there from Idaho Rep Seat B. both Glenn LaFay and Ron Korn from District 3 Bonner County Commissioner race did not show, although Ron Korn had a proxy read an opening statement and instead. And then the uncontested races, the Bonner County Assessor Dennis Engelhart showed and read an opening statement, but we didn't have any attendance from Sheriff Darrell Wheeler or the Bonner County Prosecuting Attorney Lewis Marshall. So, and we had a bit of a low attendance too, probably about half what we usually get, or even a third what we usually see. And I think that's indicative of the fact that this is a general election, and many people in North Idaho will understand that the quote-unquote real election happens in spring, and the general is just kind of when everything becomes official. And, you know, there might be some election fatigue as well. But I did hear that we had a pretty good listening crowd on KRFY. A lot of people told me they listened instead of went. So maybe more people just decided to tune into your awesome radio station. but at any rate, it was a good event. It was mostly civil. You know, the crowd was very well behaved. I didn't see any major problems that occurred. You know, sometimes we have a little bit of fireworks. Nothing too bad this time. It was great.
The crowd was civil. You guys answer, or you, the format of this particular debate was you brought your own questions, but also accepted questions from the audience. Was it mostly questions from the audience that you ended up asking, or was it?
Yeah, questions from the audience. Well, I had a couple that were emailed to me beforehand.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the deal. We let the audience write the questions on note cards, and then we lump them together to get rid of any redundant questions or you know, inappropriate questions. And then that's kind of how we roll through the evening, and it works pretty well that way because we can – sometimes we can take two or three questions and combine them into one and attack the issue from different angles. And so that works pretty well.
Should we go down the races one by one, kind of how the evening went or how things are, maybe how the race in general is going too.
I mean, do you want to start with the county?
Sure.
So we had the only county race that we had, contested race that we had, it was District 1, Bonner County Commissioner, which was Brian Domke, the Republican candidate, versus Steve Johnson, who I erroneously labeled an independent at the forum, but he's actually registered as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And he often will register as a Democrat or independent, and I had incorrect information on that. So,
well, an understandable mistake because he was in the primary as an independent in a different race.
Correct.
And then stepped into the Democratic race when that was vacated in District 1.
And so, I thought both Domke and Johnson did a great job. I think they both, spoke to their sides of each issue. And I think Steve Johnson stole the night with his stool. he had a step stool because the podium was so high, and it brought a much needed moment of levity every time. And you know, Steve Johnson, he was my former sixth grade teacher and principal at Southside Elementary, and so it's fun to see him in forums like this. And I think they both they were articulate in their positions, and you know, they were semi-respectful of one another. And Johnson, you know, he really turned it on in the closing statement, and he kind of made a comparison against himself and his opponent, kind of went down the line, and so I think they both did a good job, you know, expressing what they what their platforms are all about.
And then nobody showed for District 3. Ron Korn and Glenn LaFay, there was an opening statement. That's it. So,
Both LaFay and Korn, LaFay is the independent candidate and Korn is the Republican. They did not attend. Korn had a proxy read a statement, an opening statement. It's always disappointing when we don't have people show to these forums because we do these forums for the voters, and it's a service for the candidates as well to reach their voters. And so I always encourage, you know, as many people to attend the forums, both on stage and in the audience.
And Ron Korn did not respond to your to the candidate's questionnaire that the reader put out either. I couldn't help but notice. Yeah,
it's frustrating, honestly. We've had a few stories about Ron Korn in the past that perhaps he's not pleased about. All I can say is, well, we're journalists and we write the stories that need to be written and we cover the news. And so participation in these questionnaires, I feel like it's just one of your duties when you run for office. You have to reach your constituents however you can. And, it's frustrating when they don't submit answers to questions that we send, a month in advance and give them plenty of time. And sometimes it's 2 weeks in advance, sometimes it's a month. I try to give everyone enough time to get the questions in or get the answers in and just have a full accounting of everyone running on the ballot. So people can pick up the paper and read it and just get a glimpse of who the candidates are and who aligns with their position.
In the state races, the legislative races, kicking off with our incumbent, Mark Sauder, in House Seat 1A, who is facing a Democratic challenger, Karen Mattei. Sauder is a Republican and has been in the legislature for one term, I believe, for these past 2 years. Yeah, was elected in 22. Notes, comments on that race, on their performance this evening, the two of them?
Those legislative races, I think, are the most interesting. I mean, not to say that the county commissioner races aren't, but the legislative races in District 1 are very unusual this time around because we have two Democratic candidates who are, like, legitimate candidates. Mm-hmm. In years past, kind of alluding back to that point we were talking about regarding the primaries, where people feel like that's the big show, we've had a lot of Democratic names on the ballot in primaries past, but they've usually been sort of placeholders. Just to put somebody on the ballot, just to see what happens. But these, Karen Mattei and Catherine Larson they're actually like running ground games with their campaigns. They're door knocking. They're buying advertising. They have nuanced and articulated platforms. They've attended events. So these are real challengers to the Republican candidates in those races. And I think the Mark Sauder, Karen Mattei race in District 1A is interesting because it's requiring Sauder to talk about things like Proposition 1 in maybe ways that he doesn't want to. That was one of the big differences I saw between the two, was when we got to the Prop 1 question, which, most politics observers around the state are regarding as the number one election in the state. What happens with Prop 1 is going to be the most important story that comes out of this election. Mattei, as a Democrat, it's pretty clear she's going to be in favor of Prop 1, and she came out very much in favor of it. Talking about, how it would expand the franchise to the unaffiliated independent voters. A lot of the talking points that we hear from proponents. Whereas Sauder, he had a much more measured answer to that question about, do you support Prop 1? And he said, I don't feel like it's the place of elected officials to be telling voters how to vote on a citizen's initiative. And however are my district votes, I will vote that way too. So it was unclear if he is in favor of Prop 1 or not. And I think he ran kind of a savvy line on that, but it also opened the way for Mattei to come out in her statement saying, like, I do believe it's the duty of elected officials to say how they feel about these things to help their constituents form an opinion. So that was an interesting moment. I think that in that particular race, the abortion issue loomed large. I mean, it loomed large throughout the entire LD1 section, but in that particular one, I think it was a little more pointed insofar as, Mark Sauder has had kind of a mixed record on that issue. He voted in favor at one point of one of the bills that has been very heavily criticized. He even appeared on a PBS Frontline he was interviewed on, national media about his vote. And he essentially said during that interview that he wasn't aware that there was going to be sort of these other consequences. And he kind of got raked through the coals a little bit by some people who see him as a much more moderate sort of moderating force in the state house for him to vote on a bill like that and then sort of come back and say, well, I didn't know it was going to be like that. So he's had to sort of walk back and sort of prove himself, I think, on that issue and with some other votes. But again, because we have legitimate Democratic contenders in these races, they get to come claim sort of the high ground on those issues. And I think, you know, Karen Mattei did that as well. I mean, she came right out and was like, this is a crisis. You know, we're chasing away our doctors. Like, women can't get health care. So I think Sauder feels a lot of pressure on that particular issue. And it's one of the other central issues, I think, in the general. And you saw some of that play out in the District 1B race, which was interesting itself also because, you know, Cornell Razor didn't show. So he basically ceded the whole field to his Democratic challenger, Catherine Larson, who speaks very articulately and very forcefully on every point that she makes. And for her part, you know, she came out swinging against sort of the party politics of state government, attacking sort of the party bosses, saying that, you know, the Idaho Freedom Foundation, that far-right lobbyist think tank, whatever kind of organization it is, that influences so heavily the way that lawmakers vote. She came right out and was like, this group is, you know, hijacked or bullying the legislators. We need to break this sort of cycle. You know, Prop 1 is the absolute way to do it. You know, the abortion laws need to be, you know, altered or taken away entirely. You know, we're having a healthcare crisis. Doctors are fleeing the state. So she got to sort of just run her whole game with no opposition at all. And that kind of goes back to what Ben was saying, like how important it is for these candidates to take part in this stuff, even if they feel like it's a foregone conclusion or that the venue is going to be hostile or whatever. It's just bad. It's just bad optics to, you know, and bad politics to just not show up and let your opponent just kind of run the show.
Yeah, it was too bad Cornell didn't come. And it was kind of interesting to me. He didn't communicate at all. Maybe he missed the memo, but in the primary forum we had, he was actually complimentary of the way the forum was conducted. He thought it was, he expressed that he thought it was done fairly. And the forum really is, everybody gets the exact same amount of time to speak. And the questions are coming from the crowd. So I would say the crowd did seem to be leaning more moderate Democrat this particular forum.
The applause and, you know, when there was applause, it was a little louder for some of those more moderate positions, which I guess takes me to sort of the Senate race.
Yeah.
That one's got a lot of baggage that comes along with it.
A little bit more testy, that one.
Yeah. And that one, you know, that's Republican Jim Woodward, who was the senator for two terms for District 1 until he was unseated by our current and outgoing Senator Scott Herndon, who is, you know, among the chief architects of the abortion trigger law issue that we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. And I think he lost that primary in large part because of those votes. That's just my theory. But so Jim, you know, took the primary. There was no Democratic challenger. In that, Steve Johnson, like we alluded to, had been the independent challenger in that race. But once Herndon was defeated in the primary, Johnson dropped out, changed into a Democrat, and ran for county commissioner, which opened a position for Dan Rose to throw his name in as an independent. And those familiar with local politics are very familiar with Dan Rose. He's kind of a local right-wing firebrand, served on the Lake Ponderay Hospital District.
Self-labeled socialist hunter.
Yes.
Yes. I don't know exactly what that means, but yeah. So,
I mean, Woodward being a Republican, Rose is, of course, running as an independent, but everyone sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge knows that he's running as the far-right candidate.
Yeah.
So he's the right of Republican candidate.
Yeah, I think if we had any fireworks that night, it came from Dan Rose. You know, I have to compliment Dan for being passionate about his politics, but he's also he also devolves into a lot of pejorative usage. He calls people names. We try to run a civil forum. We try to be polite and respectful of all the candidates. And there was a moment when I had to actually ask him to sit down because he was over his time and he was, you know, calling people Marxists and socialists. And when you're a hammer, everything's a nail. And when you're to the hard right flank of your party, everybody's a socialist, I guess, and and it's a frustrating way of talking about the issues.
And those two candidates couldn't have had farther apart positions either,
right?
I mean, when you look at the House races, you know, people found common ground on certain things, and you know, there was a sort of general sense that we need to represent everybody in the district. I mean, all the candidates in the House races agreed on that if elected, they would be a representative for everyone. In the Senate race, that, I mean, Jim Woodward came out and said that initially, like, you know, I will be a senator for every single person in the district. I've done it before. I'll do it again. Rose didn't really come out and say that. He said that, you know, I will have an open door as your senator. Mm-hmm. And if you come to me with problems, you have to come with sources to talk about them. And then I will talk about them with you. So that's a little different than saying I will be a representative for all the people in the district. It was mm-hmm. kind of a sort of a challenge in a sense to the constituency.
Yeah. Contest on facts.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, Woodward as a Republican has an interesting row to hoe because, you know, he's been censured as Mark Sauter by the Republican Party for not being Republican enough. And both of them, you know, both Sauter,
the county Republican Party.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Central committee.
Yeah. Central committee.
City. Yeah.
But they both sort of turned that into a plus, which I found interesting. You know, it's like, I don't have a relationship with the IFF. I don't have a relationship with the right wing of the party. They hate me. So I'm not going to be beholden to them. I'm going to represent you, which I think resonated with the crowd who seemed to be a little sick of the whole, like, inter-party divisions.
Yeah, and I thought that was one of Sauter's more strong moments in the forums when, you know, Mattei kind of alluded to the fact that maybe he signed a loyalty oath to the IFF or to the Republican Party. And, you know, Sauter came back saying he's not beholden to the IFF, and he's censured. And it was kind of a moment of, oh, yeah, right, I remember that. We have so many news stories that trickle down about, you know, about party infighting. You forget about some of these things, but he very much was censured by the the Republican Central Committee.
And they both worn it as kind of a badge of honor, which I find interesting. And it sort of feeds into the positions that Woodward was expressing during the night. I mean, he, unlike a lot of the people that he would be serving with in the Republican caucus, I think Prop 1 would work. I think Prop 1 would do what it says it will do. And we've veered off course over the past 12 years since the Republicans closed their primary. So that expresses an opinion that almost no Republicans in the state house express. But, you know, it's just part and parcel with Woodward's sort of overall stance as a moderate, sort of pragmatic, practical,
more traditional Republican. Right. And there are a lot of more traditional Republicans, like former Governor Butch Otter and former Attorney General Jim Jones have basically came out in support of Prop 1.
There's been a lot of Republicans, prominent Republicans, who've come out in favor of it, but they've all been former.
Right.
You know, they haven't actually been
They don't want to burn the bridges with the
service.
Well, that's the current
Republican Party,
Idaho politics, especially when you're a Republican, you have to dance. You have to appeal to those on both wings of your party platform.
Right. Well, I mean, Woodward also had a pretty unorthodox position for a Republican in Idaho, and that was saying that, you know, this abortion issue that we have with, you know, the strict rules regarding, you know, when and how an abortion can be performed, and then, you know, the criminalization of the doctors, he says that's a crisis. He agrees with he sounded a lot like the Democratic candidates, you know, saying that this is a high priority, like one of the top priorities for the state. If we don't solve it, we're not going to have a healthcare system in the state.
We're not going to keep doctors. Yeah.
Yeah. Once again, would have been good to have Cornell Razor there because I think he takes a different approach to that issue.
Well, Dan Rose went into some detail
this,
where he suggested that the law is fine. What's the problem is the penalties aren't harsh enough.
That was an interesting criticism of the law.
Yeah. I mean, he wants a $25,000 misdemeanor fine for a first offense, quote unquote, of an abortion conducted under the law that's, you know, not proper or whatever, and a $50,000 fine for a second offense, and then and a third offense, you know, some kind of criminal action.
Yeah.
So, I mean, his position was crystal clear that he thinks it doesn't go far enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said the bill is fine, the penalties need to be corrected.
Yeah. It was interesting to me, especially in maybe in contrast or things have changed a little bit since the last form, which was only 2 weeks earlier than this one. Just the Democrats, you could really tell that they were part of the same political party. It seemed like they were all in some cases almost kind of tag teaming, or they build on what, you know, the other one had said. The Republicans, which are, you know, the largest party in this area, but they're all over the map.
Right.
I mean, it would be the delegation that we would send, even if it was a full Republican slate down to Boise, would be would not have a lot of common ground on certain issues, a lot of issues.
I think Souder and Woodward are pretty much on board with each other. There's some, I'm sure, differences in there, but you know, if Razor was thrown into that mix, then yeah, you'd have a divided delegation. But we've had a divided delegation many times.
Mm. Yeah,
and sometimes, you know, I've heard it argued that it works better if it's a little bit divided. Mm. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that argument.
Mm-hmm. Other, I guess, big picture takeaways from the night before we move on and play some music. Go ahead, Ben.
I think, as Zach alluded to before, I think it was heartening to see that the Democratic Party had put out candidates who were actually running on platforms. They were door knocking. They were very much running active campaigns, because I think that's a sign of health in your local elections when you actually have multiple parties running. It's not just the foregone conclusion of the R, because we see a lot of this infighting in the Republican Party because they have no one else to fight. You know, everyone to the left of those, you know, Republicans on the right is a threat to them. They're either a rhino or a, you know, socialist or a Marxist or whatever other names they want to throw out there. And so I think having a strong party, contested election is healthy for our electorate. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is a sign of times, because in the past we've had candidates that are just stand-ins. And I mean, one candidate who was a John Birch member and who's just not a Democrat at all. And it's frustrating because it's, I mean, there are a lot of people in North Idaho who are either unaffiliated or independent, and they don't identify with either party. And, you know, they're feeling strongly about open primaries initiative, Prop 1, because they want representation and they want to have a choice to have good candidates to sift through in the primaries. And so, yeah, it's heartening to me to see that. And I hope it keeps up.
Mm-hmm. And I will throw in that if you did not catch the forum in person or over the air, it's on our website, krfy.org. You can find links to that forum. You can also find links to the October 2nd forum that was held. Mm-hmm. And as well, we have been conducting a series of interviews. We call it our Local Decision 2024 series on Wednesdays, and we've interviewed side by side the basically debates in the studio here, candidates from each of the contested races. We did interview on Wednesday the Commissioner of District 1 candidates, Domke and Johnson, on October 23rd. That's next Wednesday. We'll be interviewing the Commissioner of District 3 candidates, Ron Korn and Glenn LaFay. They both confirmed they'll be there. And then on October 30th, we're going to be talking pro and con on Proposition 1. Mm-hmm. And as well, we're going to interview the mayors of Sandpoint and Ponderay on the 1% local option tax that's going to be on the ballot for people that live in the city limits of those two cities. Mm-hmm. So go to krfy.org and you can hear all that and get a full dose of candidates and election stuff.
And I have a quick insertion as well. This is a little bit outside the election speak, but the Reader and the Daily Bee were teaming up on Tuesday the 22nd to have a little workshop for our local nonprofit members and anybody, really. It's a free workshop. And it's to learn how to write a press release, learn how to craft a successful release that can get coverage in the media and, you know, show up at the Heartwood Center at 3:00 on Tuesday the 22nd, and Zach and I will be there from the Reader, and Carolyn Lobsinger from the Bee will be in attendance as well. And we're just going to share what we know to help our local nonprofit members and executive directors learn everything they need to know about writing successful press releases.
I saw that already on my calendar, Ben.
All right.
Okay. It's going to be fun. Yes. With that, I suppose we wrap up North Idaho News of the Week. Thank you, Ben Olson and Zach Agadon, for joining us this morning from the Sandpoint Reader. It's on newsstands now, including the full, not just a wrap-up of the forum and a kind of a state of the race, but also the complete answers to the candidate questionnaire from all those candidates who replied, which is most but not all. the absolutely worth reading if you're a voter in North Idaho. It's, yes, on newsstands right now. Volume 21, issue 42. Okay. I'm going to play a little Johnny Cash now to take us out. Yes, thanks again for coming in.
Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Chris.
Yep, have a good week, guys.